appreciates. Just to warn you in advance, the camera is rolling. So behave yourselves. Thank you very much, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. This is a portfolio committee meeting of Human Settlement. We are on recess. I think I must start there. Members of Parliament are on recess, but we have convened this meeting because of the importance of what we are going to discuss today. Parliament has referred the Property Practitioners Bill to the committee on the 15th of June. So we felt that we should start the process so that at least as we are on recess doing other things, members of the public can be able to start doing their submissions as part of the process. But by the time you come back from the recess, at least the submissions have been done. Just to give a background, and first to appreciate my colleagues, that when we asked for this meeting, they dropped everything and they came back. Honorable members, thank you very much, because you understand the importance of the work that you are doing. Sometime around 2014, 2015, when we came back into the House, into Parliament, there was a Concord decision that looked, an auction alliance took a State Agents Affairs Board to court to challenge the search and seizure part of the legislation. And the Concord ruled in favor of the Auction Alliance. And then Estate Agents Affairs Board and the Department of Human Settlement then were requested or asked to repeal that part of the legislation. But when the department and the AAP looked at that legislation, they realized that it's a legislation of 1976, which in any case needed to be redone and be rehauled totally. So instead of dealing with that section that the Concord has ruled against, they felt that actually a whole process needs to be started. And that's then how the whole bill was started. But also there was a decision by Parliament, in any case, to look at all bills that are pre-1994. And each portfolio committee to start a process of making sure with the department that those bills are in line with the Constitution. So the Property Practitioners Bill then came about, and it went through Cabinet, was approved by Cabinet, signed by the Minister, and then came to Parliament, and then Parliament referred it to us on the 15th of June. So when we received then the bill from Parliament on the 15th of June, which was a Friday, we then put together a process of having this meeting today. Today we are going to be briefed by the department on the bill. They're going to take us through, and then We will have a presentation briefly by the researcher of the portfolio committee, and then a short discussion, and then we will discuss the process moving forward on how then we take the process of the bill. So that's where we are, colleagues and gentlemen. That, I thought it's important to give that background so that everybody understands why we are here. We do have an apology from the Deputy Minister in writing, I know. And we have an apology from the Minister who is busy with the cabinet committees around the issues of Northwest. So she couldn't make it. The DG of the department has submitted an apology, but the DG Neville Cheney is here, and COO, Ms. Cindy Ngongo, are here representing the department. And I know with the whole team, and the legal team from the department. I know that the incumbent, the Estate Agents Affairs Board legal advisor, is also here, because the bill, the legislation will be migrating the Estate Agents Affairs Board to a property practitioner's regulatory authority when everything is done and set. So that's the background, colleagues. We hope to be done by lunchtime. But if we are not done by lunchtime, we will go until we are done. So that this process is complete for today. So without any waste of time, I'm gonna hand over to DDG Cheney and COO first, and then they will then explain to us the process moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. As the Chairperson has indicated that we are here to brief the Portfolio Committee on the process of repealing the Property Practitioners Bill. It has been a long journey from 1976, and we are hoping to take this bill forward. We've got the team here, Chairperson, that will be taking us through the presentation. We've got the team here, Chairperson, that will be taking us through the presentation. The department has been working together with the Estate Agency Affairs Board as it is our entity. Thank you, Chairperson.
Morning, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Just to indicate, Chair, just if I could ask your permission just to introduce the colleagues. We also have the relevant DDG for Corporate Services, under who the legal services, that's Ms. Nelly Lotulinani. We've got Mr. Sibule Watani from the Office of the DM, Mr. Sean Mlanzeli from the Office of the DG. Chair, we've got Mr. Kwezi Ngwenya, who is the Acting Chief Director for Legal Services, who is responsible for the processing of the bill, together with Mr. Tulani Kambule, who is the Acting Director, who has been integral in the drafting and the management of the process of the bill. Chair, we've got, as you've indicated, Albert Ladi from the EAAB. Behind me, we've got Mr. Piso Molloy, who is the Chief Director responsible for entities, and the Property Practitioners Bill, the regulation, as well as the compliance will fall under Ms. Molloy, as does the EAAB. Thanks, Chair. Chair, just to indicate, Mr. Ngwenya will take us through the bill, but I think just to indicate and I think to supplement what Mr. Ngongo has indicated, Chair, we will present, but there are a couple of crucial issues which we will just come back after Mr. Ngwenya has presented. Thanks, Chair. Members.
Thank you very much. Before Mr. Ngwenya presents, I know Mr. Jenkins from the Parliament, from the Legal Department of Parliament is here. Because of it's a parliamentary process, so you will guide us through. Thank you very much. So I know you are dealing with many committees that are dealing with legislation right now. Thanks for coming. Mr. Ngwenya, we're handing over to you now.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks, Honorable Members. Chair, I'll take you through the presentation.
Maybe I'm being advised, Mr. Ngwenya, maybe just before you do your presentation, let me first allow, because it's been looked at by our researchers, let them present first their assessment, and then you come in. Mr. Sabelo, what is your name, by the way? Okay. Sabelo Mnguni, next to me, is a content advisor and sometimes acts as a researcher for the department, for the portfolio committee, unfortunately. So I just want to give him the opportunity first to actually take us through his own assessment and then allow the department to present. Parliament first, Kwezi, and department after. Are you happy with that? Okay, we're giving over to Sabi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I forgive you for not remembering my surname. I understand that you've got several engagements. Okay. As a way of background, the bill is necessary because of two main issues. The issue of income and social inequalities in South Africa, which fit into economic aspect or economic potential of the whole of South Africa, influence the changes in the bill. Firstly, the Property Practitioners Bill was gazetted for comment in 31st March 2017. And this new piece of legislation is intended to repeal the Aging Estates Agency Affairs Act of 1976. So how does it do that? There are seven major changes that we deemed critical for us to provide a bit reflection on. Firstly, who and what is a property practitioner? The definition is that anyone or any entity in the market who sells or lets an immovable asset on behalf of the next person in order to get some gain. So now the new definition includes broadly your bond broker, home inspector, facilitators, and so on and so forth. But it excludes other people like candidate attorneys, sheriff of court, and persons offering property practitioner services. The second aspect to the bill is the establishment of an independent ombudsman's office. This office will seek to deal with consumer complaints independently. The second aspect of the bill is the extended powers of the inspectors. As has the chair indicated earlier on, that this emerged as a response to the debacle between the department and the Auction Alliance. So the inspectors will be given powers to inspect properties. The third issue is the repayment of remuneration unlawfully earned by a property practitioner. So the property practitioner, if they don't have the fidelity fund certificate, they'll be required to pay back the fees that they charge for the services that they provided to a person that wants to sell a property. With regards to the disqualification from issuing the fidelity fund certificate, person is required to firstly to have possession of a tax clearance certificate, and also being on the treasury tender default will automatically disqualify the practitioner. Lastly, a person has to have a BEE certificate, otherwise if they don't, they will automatically disqualify. The other aspect is the record keeping by a property practitioner. They will be required to keep records of engagements, legal documents for about 10 years. The last element is the issue of the compulsory disclosure form. Now, to promote best practices in the process of the selling and buying of a property, the property practitioner or the person that is selling the property would be required to fill this form. Honorable Chairperson, I have provided an overview, a kind of a high-level overview of the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mnguni. High-level overview. Appreciated. We will now allow the department to take us through the bill. Thank you, Mr. Ngwenya.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the precise oversight, you know, over the critical elements of the bill. Chair, you know, as the research have already indicated, the primary purpose of this legislation or a piece that is before us is basically, you know, to repeal the principal, you know, act, you know, the Estate Agency Affairs Act of 1976, which its primary purpose was to meant to provide for the establishment of the Estate Agency Affairs Board, the Fidelity Fund, and the control of certain activities of estate agents in the public interest. To summarize that, Chair, it means to say that the real essence of the principal legislation was basically to regulate the activities of and the code of conduct of estate agent, you know, to the public interest, and also in the process protect, you know, the consumers, you know, as a result of the particular activities of estate agent in the process. Chair, this piece of legislation that is before us, the researcher is correct that it's a very old piece of legislation, you know, to be precise, over the period of 40 years. So it's quite important, Chair, that at this particular time and era we need, you know, for us, you know, to really look into this particular piece of legislation to advance, you know, the interest of society in general. Chair, when you look at the background of this piece of legislation, over the years, the new market conditions dictated a paradigm shift, you know, from the traditional practice of estate agents and the agencies. Over the period of time, Chair, there have been a number of increase, honorable members, of the new role players, you know, in the property market. Hence, if we have a look at our own definition of a property practitioner, you'll see that you'll agree with me in principle, Chair, that, you know, it's a very long definition. And it's a long definition for one simple reason, is to try, let me say, you know, to address, you know, this important issue of the increase of the number of the role players into the property sector. The issue of the bond originators, for example, the issue of individuals playing a role as in the bridging finance, the auctioneers, you know, the assessors, you know, all those role players who are playing a role in the property space, we are trying, actually, you know, to make sure to say that they got regulated, you know, to ensure that, actually, you know, the public is protected, you know, in general. Chair, there is a need as well, you know, to align this legislation to the new market conditions. It is also imperative, Chair, that the current legislation, as we have indicated, is very old and also need, actually, you know, to respond, you know, to the fundamental, you know, imperatives of a democratic dispensation. Also, there is a need, Chair, to align this legislation with the constitutional, you know, imperatives as well. You have already alluded to the fact that there was, of course, a Concord judgment which compelled, actually, you know, the EAB and the department in general, actually, you know, to amend certain sections of that legislation. And in particular, with regards to those powers, you know, of our inspectors. Chair, there is a need as well, you know, to ensure that this piece of legislation comply with the issue of good corporate governance and principles. I think it's quite important, Chair, because the old legislation that was before us of 1976 was not responding to their particular important issues. Chair, what is critical as well is that my colleagues have touched base on these issues in terms of when the bill was gazetted for public comment on the 21st of March, and therefore, over and above that, Chair, the department, you know, held information sessions, you know, in all provinces in order to enrich the process of the written comments. Chair, we also had, you know, number of workshops as well, you know, to try, let me say, you know, to give effect to this process of the public comment process. Chair, the main object of the bill that is before us is basically to transform the property market by ensuring that it is reflective of the South African demographic. That's the most important part, Chair. And also is to create alignment and synergy with the Constitution and other relevant piece of legislation. Chair, the alignment of this legislation with other important, you know, pieces of legislation is critical in a sense that it will, of course, actually, you know, advance, you know, the interest actually of the consumer and advance the better actually, you know, regulatory intention. Like, for example, the PAJA, the Consumer Protection Act, and also the number of other pieces of legislation were taken into consideration as when we were drafting this piece of legislation. Chair, it's also to enhance the corporate efficiency and also to embark on a drive to professionalize the real estate sector. It's quite important, Chair, that as and when actually we are transforming, it is also important that the industry that we're trying to regulate also need actually, you know, to be professionalized and make sure to set up from time to time, you know, their code of conduct actually, you know, it's amended and it's in line with what is required actually, you know, within the property sector. Chair, the bill, if you look at it in terms of the content thereof, chapter one of the bill, Chair, it deals with the definitions, it deals actually with the objects, it deals with application and establishment of the authority. Chair, like I've indicated, you know, the definition of a property petitioner is one thing under the definition that is very critical and important. In a sense that try, let me say, you know, to make sure to say that we incorporate and cover all those other role players within the property sector. I think that's the most critical part. The bill defines the property sector to include everyone in the selling, purchasing, letting, renting, and financing and marketing of property. Chapter 2, Chair, of the bill provides for the governance structures of the property practitioner regulatory authority. The bill further, Honorable Chair, provides for the composition, appointment, disqualification, dissolution, termination, management of conflict of interest, code of ethics, powers and duties of members of the board and committees of the board. That's the corporate governance structure, Chair, of the authority. Chair, Chapter 3 of the bill that is before us provides for the appointment of the chief executive officer, the staff of the authority, the management and the conflict of interest within the authority and delegation of functions and powers of the chief executive officer. Chapter 4 thereof also deals with, provides for the establishment and appointment and resources, powers and duties of the ombuds. You know, Chair, like the researcher have indicated, is one of the key component elements. The rationale for this, Chair, was basically to establish, you know, an independent, you know, an authority that will deal, you know, with disputes that, you know, arose within, you know, the real estate sector, and in particular with regards to complaints and the handling and the management, you know, and the code of conduct of estate agents, as and when the EAB is dealing with this sort of kind of disciplinary processes. If any party feel aggrieved or not satisfied with the process of the authority in respect of resolving or attending to a particular matter, you know, any party may refer the matter to the ombuds for further, actually, you know, adjudication and processing. It provides for the establishment of property practitioners' ombuds office, appointment of the ombuds, staff and resources of the ombuds, lodging of complaints and mediation and adjudication. J, Chair, that particular provision and that particular chapter, you know, is a very important chapter in the sense that we need also, you know, to apply our mind in terms of, you know, the real intention and application thereof, you know, considering, you know, the other views, you know, that suggest that we should rather actually, you know, have, you know, the ombuds actually for the sector than rather than having, you know, an ombuds, you know, for a particular, you know, a sector. It further provides share for the accounting and the responding, you know, by further provide for the accounting and reporting by the ombuds in relation to, you know, his area of responsibility. You know, chapter 5 of the bill, you know, honourable members, provides for the compliance, enforcement, and enforcement measures. It further provides for the appointment powers and duties of inspectors to enter, you know, to ensure compliance. It provides for procedure of lodging complaints and non-compliance. It provides further, Chair, inspectors are empowered in terms of this particular section to search premises and seize documentation from property practitioners where there is a non-compliance with the Act. They are empowered to issue compliance notices for non-compliance for a person to comply with specific, you know, with specific times. Chair, this particular provision, the provision that we've already alluded to, which basically arose as a result of the judgment of the Concord, you know, on the auction alliance matter, wherein, you know, certain, you know, powers of our inspectors actually were declared to be unconstitutional, and therefore, Chair, we, as and when we are drafting these particular provisions, we ensure to say that actually they are, you know, constitutionally compliant, and also to ensure that actually they align actually, you know, as recommended, you know, by the Constitutional Court on this matter. In the compliance notice, Chair, the authority may determine a fine to be paid by the person concerned. Chapter 6 of the bill provides for the funds of the authority and financial year of the authority. Chapter 7 thereof, Chair, also deals with the issue, provides for the continuation of the Estate Agency Affairs Fund under the new name Property Practitioners Fidelity Fund. It further provides for the management and control of the Fidelity Fund, regulates the investment of monies, payments of funds from the Fidelity Fund. Chapter 8 is to regulate the application for Fidelity Fund certificates, prohibits rendering services without the Fidelity Fund certificate. Any property practitioner, Chair, need to be in possession of a valid Fidelity Fund certificate to be issued by the authority. Chapter 9, honorable members, deals and regulates the code of conduct and behavior of property practitioners through the code of conduct. Sanctionable conduct, prohibition of undesirable practices and measures concerning control and supervision of candidates, property practitioners. Chair, this particular chapter is very important because it's done precisely, actually, you know, at the, you know, interest of the public out there to ensure that the consumers are best protected under this piece of legislation, because it further regulates, in particular, the code of conduct of estate agents. Because if estate agents, anyone suffered any pecuniary loss as a result of the conduct of an estate agent, those individuals, you know, do have the right, you know, to lodge, you know, the claim, you know, with the Fidelity Fund, wherein the Estate Agency Affairs Board will be compelled to assess and also, you know, to make any payments, you know, for that effect. So I think that particular section is very important, Chair, to make sure that it advances the interest of the consumer. Chair, the same chapter, it also regulates the franchising in the industry. And then chapter 10 of the bill also regulates the consumer protection that I've already alluded to, and also provide for a mandatory disclosure form, language of the agreement, consumer education and information. It's a very important aspect, Chair, because in the interest of the public, we need actually to ensure that we advance, notwithstanding any other facts, the consumer protection. That is why, hence, in this particular chapter, there is a provision which makes, you know, mandatory disclosure forms that as and when we are transacting with estate agents, you know, they need, you know, to disclose, you know, the material condition of the property that they are letting or they are selling to the consumer. That was done primarily to advance the protection of the consumer. Chapter 11 of the bill deals with the general matters which include the promotion of the property sector transformation, Chair. This aspect is very critical, Chair, because it makes, you know, making of regulations, penalties, delegation of powers by the minister, legal proceedings against the authority, and the use of the name of the regulatory authority and transactional support, you know, and the transitional provisions thereof. Chair, I think it is quite important for us to emphasize on the point of the property sector transformation. It's important in a sense that, as is provided for under Section 69, it stipulates that the authority must, from time to time, introduce measures to be implemented, which may include but not limited to the establishment of the Transformation Fund. The Transformation Fund, Chair, its primary purpose is basically, you know, to advance transformation. Because as it stands today, you know, the transformation may be seen to be very, slowly implemented, because most of the time the entity relies, actually, you know, on the outside, actually, you know, funders to fund the transformation initiatives. All the incubation program proposed within the, you know, within the industry, Chair, you know, should be funded, actually, you know, by the Transformation Fund. So in here, Chair, what we're trying to do is to legislate specifically to say that we should have a Transformation Fund, we should have the incubation programs and the capacity building programs to redress the imbalances of the past. This is the most and paradigm shift, Chair, to make sure to say that we compel the institution, we compel the, you know, the department, you know, to establish such, and also to make sure that you are able from time to time to monitor this particular process. Chair, Section 69 thereof as well states that the Transformation Fund envisaged, you know, in this particular section shall aim to promote the economic transformation by facilitating the accessibility of finance for property ownership, property development, investment, in order to enable the meaningful participation of the historically disadvantaged individuals, including women and youth. It's quite important in a chair, because that's what is informed by the current status quo, because if you have a look at the sector itself, the sector is untransformed, and the majority of the people that are playing a space, you know, are basically aging, and we need to encourage women to participate, and young people also in particular, for them to participate in the sector. But we can only achieve that, Chair, if we are in control, you know, of certain financial initiatives and certain programs that are duly funded and adequately funded, actually, you know, by the sector itself. Chair, the bill currently, Chair, you know, as it stands before you, the researcher have already alluded to the fact that it was, of course, tabled before Cabinet in 2017, and therefore subsequently introduced, Chair, into Parliament by our Honourable Minister in terms of Rule 241 of the Rule of National Assembly, Chair, as I rest.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kwezi, from the Department. As we welcome Mr. Hen, I think I saw him coming, the State Law Advisor is also here. Very important work we're doing here. Even State Law Advisors know that they should be here. So don't take this work very light, Honorable Members. Thank you very much for that briefing. I'm not sure if there's any probably additions from your side before...
Thanks, Chair. I think, I mean, it's just important to refer, I mean, in the printed copy of the bill, page 40, on the Memorandum of the Objects of the Property Practitioners Bill, and it outlines the key points, just reiterates the key points, and I think the key point, one of the key points that has been there, and I think we've raised this on a couple of occasions, is that I think we must, you know, it's just cognizant for us to take into account that the total property value of the sector in which we regulate in, or this bill when it's enacted will regulate, is approximately 6 trillion. And I think the issues around the question of the insertion of the section under chapter 11, section 63, around the question of the property transformation sector charter is quite important, because I think it's one of the issues that we've raised previously. And in 2013, that was the statistic that we'd raised, was it constituted, black state agents constituted 8%. That figure, Chair, I think is important to note, has fluctuated between 4 and 8%. I think in 2017 it says something like 5%, so between 2013 and 2017 it regressed. It's also important to note that in relation to that figure of 5%, when we speak about the black participation, African participation is even lower than that 5%, because that 5% includes the bigger black constituency. Chair, and I think it's also point 1.4 is that the current legislation, as we've indicated, also continues the exclusion of people. We've sought to improve the monitoring of the weak monitoring that currently exists, and then also to promote the more accountability from the regulator, so it doesn't seem to be more a toned down version of self-regulation, but there's more teeth, particularly in relation to the responsibilities, roles, and also the improved executive authority responsibility. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Treny. Any other additions from the department? Thank you very much. From the presentation and the additions from Mr. Treny, it becomes very critical for us honourable members to understand that this piece of legislation in front of us, amongst other things, deals with how we transform the sector. The property sector, as it's been explained, is one of the areas where there's a lot of revenue being made. It's worth around 6 trillion, but the majority of the South Africans, which is the previously disadvantaged, are not really participating in this sector. So what are we trying to do, what the piece of legislation is trying to do, is to make sure that we then kind of level the playing field so that at least those that want to participate in this sector, there are no impediments in making sure that they participate. It's quite interesting because when you look at when it talks about the black estate agents that are constituting 8%, it also says the average age is around 57 years. That means the young people of the country don't have access in this setup. I'm sure they forgot to say around 57 years and males, because I can almost assure you females are non-existent there in that 57 years. But anyway, that's legislation in front of you, honorable members, that we are being briefed about. I'm just going to allow for questions of clarity, comments, questions, as we discuss this legislation. The legislation is aiming to migrate the Estate Agents Affairs Board, otherwise known as EAAB, to a Property Practitioners Regulatory Authority when it is all said and done. I think the other big issue about the legislation is that the Estate Agents Affairs Board was only the estate agents that were members of it. But this piece of legislation is saying we are opening up to all other role players that are participating in the property sector to actually also be regulated by this bill, your bond originators, your assessors, and others. Honorable members, I'm waiting for a signal. I'm waiting for a signal, honorable members. I'm starting with Honorable Volmarans, Honorable Malatsi, Honorable Mabe, Honorable Tole, Honorable Gatmeng. Sonyana, you are okay there? Okay, for now. You want me to point you out?
Yes,
is the signal there?
Yes,
okay. Honorable Shonyane, Honorable Baha, and Honorable Hwarai, in that order. Thank you very much. Honorable Shalembe, did I not forget you? You are fine for now. Okay, no signal yet. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation. Quite comprehensive, Chairperson, and it shows that a lot of work has gone into the discussion that emanated from a couple of years ago. My question and clarity seeking issue relates to Chapter 4, where it deals with the umbats for the property practitioners. Now, the intention is for the protection of consumers to make sure that when we seek relief, we can approach the umbats, and even given that most of your problems in this sector sometimes get not resolved to the satisfaction of the consumers or customers, and it is in good faith that the Chapter 4 is done. However, within the Department of Human Settlements, we've got a number of entities, and for the same reason, these entities have got their own umbats for seeking relief of resolving disputes. My take on it is that creating another specific umbats might add to the population of umbats that we have within the sector. What would be the take, and or if you can consider or take us through any rationale in as far as having an umbats for the entire sector? That is one, which would be efficient, which might also help in as far as the financial component of setting up. Perhaps have a super umbats with a few branches, and what would the departments take on that matter?
Thank you very much. A community of umbats. A festival of umbats. Thank you very much, Honorable Volmarans. Honorable Manas.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think I've got two comments. One with regards to the inspections, and the other will extend into, you know, the basis for this bill, because at the outset, what's indicated is the need to transform or make, you know, the industry more inclusive. So that it reflects the demographic of the country in terms of the creation of opportunities, and more so that also in terms of the professions in the industry, it's reflective of the demographics of the country. But I think what needs to be elaborated further in detail is the removal of the current... Jesus. Sorry, Chair.
Don't worry, that signal is fine.
Sorry about that, Chair. So before I lost track, yeah, so it's about the removal of barriers for what we can generally agree is, you know, historically disadvantaged individuals to participate in this industry. And some of those barriers are structural barriers, which include, you know, the actual process for participation in the, you know, through, you know, the payment for writing of the exams, the process of actually qualification into the industry. And that is why we've got this alternative market that exists in the industry. And I think one of the concerns that we have previously raised in the committee with regard to this was, what measures are you proposing to put in place before the finalization of the bill of ensuring that, you know, the unregulated market, which affects to a degree the very same demographic that we want to open up opportunities for, can then participate in the industry. And I remember, Chair, we had an engagement with a group of estate agents from Khayelitsha, if my memory still serves me well. And one of their concerns was that, you know, there is determination on their part to formally participate in the industry and to get all the necessary qualifications that would enable them to participate in the industry. But there were those structural impediments. And I was hoping that we would have a far more extensive elaboration on those interventions that are being put in place, whether there is, you know, consideration of an amnesty period of ensuring that we are taking those on board with us so that we move together. Because I think, you know, as optimistic as one wants to be about the bill, we want to get a sense that, you know, the bill is not going to exist in isolation. You know, you're not just going to have this legislation that's assented ultimately by the president and all of a sudden, you know, it gives life to everything. We're talking about the direct impact that it will have to the professions that are there in the industry. So if you can have a sense of what is the position on that, what are the interventions that are there in place, and how are we going to move forward to ensure that the demographics that we say we want to bring along to ensure that the industry is more inclusive is being brought to speed. And secondly is with regard to, you know, the inspectors, or what would be deemed the inspectors in this regard. I mean, it's quite details in terms of, you know, what their roles are and what their powers are and what will exist. But I wanted to get a sense in terms of, you know, ensuring that there is absolute credibility of these inspectors, because they're going to play a very crucial role, you know. Because to date in some industries, and I'll use the example of an entity within the department of the NHBRC, which, you know, there is recognition that, you know, they are buildings, housing projects, which, you know, get approved by inspectors, but, you know, the structures itself tell a different story in terms of, you know, the quality assurance that needs to go into place when such an inspection has been done. And I think we need a reassurance in there in terms of the rigorous process and vetting of, you know, the inspectors and their constant assessment to ensure that, you know, they remain at the level that, you know, this bill also seeks to move to. And lastly, the, you know, Chairperson, the issue that I also need clarity on with regards to inspectors is extends to their powers, you know, with regards to the seizing of documents and retaining of the FCC certificates. And I just want to get a sense, because at the last version, and I wasn't able to verify it now before this meeting, their powers extended to actually even seizure and retaining of the FFC certificates without a warrant. And I wanted to get whether that is still, you know, the position, as was the case with the previous version of the bill, and whether you've taken into consideration, you know, the potential of a problematic element to that in terms of possible legal challenges around that, and what recourse have you put into the bill itself, you know, so that we do not rely on hindsight, when it ultimately happens, so that, you know, we can be totally assured that we are not going to open ourselves to avoidable instances of possible litigation. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malatsi. Honorable Mabe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My comment and question will be around Chapter 11, the property sector transformation. You partly touched on it, as well as Honorable Malatsi touched on it. Also bearing in mind that
the exercise that we're going to embark on might have intended and unintended consequences, and given the fact that the majority of the population of South Africans have been not been participating, I mean, if you say 4% of South Africa of blacks in a 6 trillion fund, you might start having a fear that once we go out for public participation, we might get questions that might not even be relevant for the for this legislation. So one is that I wish the department also maybe can take us into confidence in terms of breaking down demographics for us. And we should know, maybe 4%, they might have had 50% of the 6 trillion, it's possible. It's possible that they might be, it might be 4%, but getting a bigger chunk. So we must also know, out of the 6 trillion, in terms of demographics as well, which race benefited more. Well, it might be a side issue that is not necessarily related to the legislation, but those are the questions that we might face when we do public participation. Possible questions that we might face. The other issue is that how do we then link this piece of legislation with the current burning issue in the country of land distribution without compensation? How are we going to bridge that gap? It's a reality. Everybody talks about that now. People want to know. So estate agents are becoming most unpopular people in the market. They are not wanted. So if we go to communities and talk about estate agents and the law that is going to cover them and transformation and all that, we can cause tensions. So let's prepare us so that when we go out there, at least we are confident to talk about this. Madam Chair, my other issue is that whether Chapter 11, the way it has been crafted, is it enough in terms of the issues related to transformation in this sector? I have no proposals, but I just want to check whether it is enough. Won't we be coming back again at a later stage and trying to address other issues? Does it also talk to all the legislations that govern the property sector? And the most important issue, the role players, your banks and all that, are they on board? Do they know about this pieces of legislation? And what are they saying in terms of funding? Are they going to be able to also transform, because it's another sector that we might not have control over? Has there been any work done to bring them on board? I will pause there for now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mabe. Honorable Stoll.
Siyabonga Sihlalo. Thank you to presenters. Chairperson, there's something that I want to find out. If they can actually, because I'm failing to understand the definition of this, because if they can actually clarify it, because if you check it, doesn't actually define the definition of this property traditional deal. If they can actually give us some more details of definitions. And the other question is the turn of what I want to find out: how many submissions have they received? And from those submissions, what I want to find out about the input, the critical input of illegally practitioners, because we have those legally practitioners. And the other chairperson, which is actually, I want to find out if they establish the transformation funds. This transformation fund is going to help the the disadvantaged communities, or it will just the critical point of everybody, even those who actually benefit from this property bill, because they benefit, most of them, the white actually did benefit from it. And what I want to find out, another thing that I want to find out, Chairperson, if you can check on the on the backyard dwellings, those who are backyard dwellings in the property. They are, or is there any anything that talk about helping them, because most of them are, I think there's a lot of things that supposed to be in place for them in this new property practitioners. And the last one, Chairperson, is the issue of disqualifications, composition, appointment and disqualifications, and dissolution and terminations. If you can just give us some, unpack that one. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Stole. Honorable Bach.
I think we must welcome the presentation as it was provided to this committee. But I think that the first point for me to make is that a piece of legislation is an enabler. It creates an environment wherein accessibility in this case is open to the extent that you want it to be. Secondly, it talks to the inclusivity in terms of the sector itself. I'm trying to say, Chairperson, that the legislation as it is not an answer to everything. There are obviously things that must be taken into account, allowed by the legislation, for us to embark on those in a form of intervention, as it were. I think that's how I want to start my comments. Now, I want to get a sense, Chairperson, firstly, on the transformation fund. Remember, the presentation says that transformation fund will help in terms of those who are trying to build their own entities and so on. But there's always an element wherein in South Africa we then say whoever gives access to those who are outside, there would be an incentive. Now, I want to check whether the Transformation Fund also talks to that specific point, wherein if Mbulelo, who has an established entity, opens it up to the previously disadvantaged, can then tap into the Transformation Fund. I just want to get a sense on that one. Two, Chairperson, taking maybe from what Usoli was saying, Honorable Volmerans, in terms of a festival of ombuds. Yes. In fear of having a duplication in terms of arms that assist us in the implementation of the legislation, I want to link this with what Usoli was raising in terms of the inspectors. Inspectors now, as I saw it, have powers that are similar to the Hawks, where they are able to, when they feel that there's some foul play or suspected foul play in institution or entity A, they can go in and seize whatever they see as evidence or what they see as the transgressions. Where does that leave our security agents? your agencies in terms of executing that kind of a responsibility. The other one, Chairperson, is that I guess when we are at this point, it means that public hearings have already taken place, if I'm correct. How has the bill been received? Or are we still going to embark on that? Is there buy-in? Is there support from the industry broadly? And if there are concerns, can we be given a sense of what those are? Because remember, the test of the legislation is whether it does change the lives of the intended recipients. And if there's some form of negativity in one sector, it means that it will defeat the purpose of what we're trying to achieve. So I'm trying to get a sense of whether have we gone out, and if we have, how has it been received, and have we taken those into account where we see that there's legitimate cases, and so on. So I think, Chairperson, if I can get those clarities, I would be okay. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Baha. Honorable Katumenga, I'm about to take your pen. Your pen, I'm going to give you this one that doesn't make the noise, because that one is... but thank you very much. Honorable Sonyane.
Thank you, Chair. No, Chair, I was not losing the signal there. I was trying to connect it to the last presentation that we had from one of our entities. First and foremost, thank you very much for the presentation. It was presented very well, with confidence. It shows that the speaker understood exactly what he was talking about. And you know, compliments don't come easy from our side. Chairperson, you know what I was worried about was this fertility fund certificate, and I was putting it together with the last presentation of the entities, which was explaining how many illegal estagents we were having, and then we were talking about it last time to say we want to try and assist those people to make sure that they comply and all those things. And when you look at the legislation and all these things that people need to have in order for them to comply, I was just a little bit worried about it, on how exactly are we going to help those estate agents to make sure that they comply with what's in the bill. So my mind was, I was just thinking about that. Secondly, this transformation fund that you are talking about, again bringing it back to those 500 illegal estate agents that we're talking about, how is it going to be possible for us to assist them without, you know, my fear is, as I could hear an honorable member speaking, my fear is that you will end up with high established estate agents being given to tap on this fund to actually assist these ones. I wish there was a way of assisting them without going through these ones who are already made. Because I don't believe they will ever give you assistance fully, because they also do not want you to participate in that market. I'm happy about that you have included now other role players, not just the estate agents only, your bond originators and your assessors, because those people are sharks. And how they operate like a mafia. So if they can be regulated on exactly, and we look at them on how they are working, even how they price, are they pricing our people correctly? Because it's like, it depends on what type of a customer comes through the door, and then they can just make an assessment of how they're going to charge you. On the last one, Chairperson, the inspectors. the powers of the inspectors, you know, we have given them powers, right? And my worry is, what control measures are we going to have to make sure that they don't turn out to be like the rogue unit, power to themselves, and then decide now who must stay, who must go, and all those things. What measures are you going to have to make sure that they don't become a rogue, a self-rogue unit?
Thank you, Honorable Shwanyane.
Honorable Khwara.
Chair, thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation. It was very clear. One, seeing that the definition is too long, and can you further clarify this definition so that one must understand it? Secondly, Chair, the issue of awareness, especially to ask people like the rural area, where really our people are not in good terms with things. What type of awareness are we going to do? I'm not sure whether that one was part of it when I saw it in the Speak Out, when one lady was robbed a house and a Speak Out was involved. And your relationship with those structures like Speak Out, because I don't know their powers, how far to deal with these type of problems and vis-a-vis your powers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Warai. Honorable Ngatiming.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. It was well outlined in all the chapters. We now understand what is that about. I'll talk about the transformation fund that is aiming at to promote economic transformation. My question will be if maybe you can clarify more on how you are going to do it differently to make sure that there is a meaningful participation of historically disadvantaged individuals, for instance, the women and the youth, better than the one that you used to have, the one learner, one estate agent. How are you going to go about, do you have enough funds, or how are you going to generate those funds to do this so that it becomes a success at the end of the day? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I was just whispering to my staff next to me that, the members of this committee are so learned, you know. They saying very serious words, enablers, incentives, rock unit. But anyway, thank you so much. It's quite a very interactive. I think before I allow the department to respond, it's important to clarify to members how we're going to go about with this process. Even though the department has had the bill publicly advertised and people have made submissions, which they will answer if the submissions that have come to the public they have incorporated in this bill. But remember, we still have to do our own process as well as Parliament. We will still send out an advert in all 11 languages, allowing people to make submissions to us now as Parliament. And we will still have public hearings. We will still have, at some point, because this is a very important process and a very critical area, hopefully we will even have a summit of this sector to make sure that we don't leave anybody behind. So I'm just saying, as they will be explaining to us how they have dealt with their own submissions, there is still going to be that window that is going to allow the public to actually do submissions to us now as Parliament. So I thought it's important that members must have that sense of comfort. Once we are done with this briefing and we know now that the legislation is in front of us, we will then apply for permission to have the advert going out. So the advert might be out by the weekend, hopefully, in all the weekend papers or even later, but that advert will be out in all languages to allow people to actually interact with us, because we are a public participatory democracy. And us as the legislation, we have to make sure that we enhance that. So it's going to be a process. That's why we felt that even whilst you are on recess, you must come, so that we do this briefing and allow then the advert to come out whilst you are on recess, and allow people to make their submissions whilst you are enjoying your recess. But when we come back, we are able to start interacting with it. So I thought it's important just to explain that part. And then I am going to allow the department, the experts, and everybody else to then try and respond to the questions and clarities, understanding that what we are doing here is not the final arbiter. We just want the members to understand the bills, the legislation itself. It's still going to go a whole lot of processes. And by the time we finish with this process, they will be reciting it as a poem, because they will know it chapter by chapter, paragraph by paragraph, because that's what they would have interacted with it. They would even be correcting Mr. Ngwenya, saying, no, that, it's not that chapter there. It's the chapter that we're dealing with. But before you do that, in response, I think for me it's also important to also for the department to clarify for us. The question has been raised, I'm just stressing it, the issue of the transformation. The whole thrust of this bill is about transforming the sector. And if you look at Chapter 11 talks about the general matters, which deals with all other issues, penalties, regulations, and powers. And then it deals with the transformation part. Don't you think it would have been important to lift out the issue of transformation out of that chapter, to stand alone, to actually draw people into the bill itself, rather than putting the issue of transformation with everything else that is there, that deals with delegation of powers, with procedures and everything else, because then it actually dims the issue of the transformation as if it's just one of the things, yet it should be the thing. So I just thought if you can probably explain that as you respond to us, because as it stands now, everybody can just miss it, because it is not standing out. And yet it would have been nice if the issue of transformation stands out, and everybody, when they take the bill, they are able to say, that section that deals with transformation, go to that section and actually get the full issue of the transformation there. So maybe if you can clarify, there might be a reason. I'm not a legal expert, so maybe there was a reason that you did it the way you did. And I think that the second part that Honorable Mabe raised, which you talk, as you talk transformation and all other issues, there is other sectors that have an impact on this, on what you are trying to do here. As she has said, the banks and others. So as the transformation charter that deals with other areas that have an impact on us, shouldn't it actually be part of this bill, so that we are able to know that as the banks have to transform, we are able to know in this bill that this is what we want to do, in terms of, because they speak to each other. I'm not sure if I'm making sense, but I'm just trying to say, the whole issue of transformation probably needs to be looked at and be worked in detail, so that nothing is left out, because that's what this bill in the first place is trying to do. So I just thought I must just say that. But you will respond. You will remember that I'm just a politician and a chair. You can probably educate us and say, no, the reason why it's put like this is because we want to achieve this. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, the technical legal expert issues will be dealt with by Mr. Ngwenya and Kambule. Chair, I'll just address just a couple of the policy issues and the comments of the members. Chair, just let me at the outset thank yourself and the committee for the reception and I think the acceptance of what we've done, and it's appreciated. I think the issue is, Chair, we've indicated that we might not have all the answers, but what we've done is that on the basis of what we professionally and in the department with our expertise, we've put that forward. And there are some issues, obviously, in an instance like this, there are some areas where we can obviously improve, and I think Parliament has that jurisdiction now to suggest and take that responsibility, and obviously it's something that we would support. Chair, just on the issue around the question of transformation, I think it's just, you know, I want to link this to the issue around, for example, the unregulated operators. And I think, you know, if you look at the unregulation or the fact that you've got a proliferation of unregulated practitioners, it's probably one of the consequences of lack of transformation. So if you have a poorly transformed industry sector, people will want to trump that because obviously there's a lack of inclusion, there's an inability for them to participate. And I think that's what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do in the bill through the transformation as well as some of the regulatory impacts is to include and make sure that it's as inclusive and developmental. Now, I think that's the important, but not only that, you're having to strike a balance between the developmental regulation and inclusion, because I don't think what we want to achieve is a situation where when you regulate, you end up excluding. That's not the intention. What we're trying to do is to ensure that basically a citizen, a consumer, ensures that their or her rights, his or her rights are protected. And then on the other hand, you've got a sector which is transformed, there's participation, there's inclusion, and those kind of things. So so that's where we're wanting to strike that balance. So it's about regulation, but it's about inclusion, and it's about how do we use the transformation to achieve those factors. Hence, Chair, we have put in place, and I think what we're asking for is Chapter 11, and Kwesi will explain the reasons why we put it under there, although there might be reasons why we want to elevate that. So the point about it is we've indicated, I think in one of the issues we've raised is that you cannot in a developmental society requiring transformation ask those that require participation and inclusion to fund that inclusion and transformation. I think it's a collective responsibility that we're asking for. It's important to note that the transformation fund, as well as some of those other matters, will fall under the ambit of the minister as executive authority and obviously account to yourselves. So how the transformation fund gets used, how it gets applied, what its priorities are, will be determined through the minister, and obviously Parliament will have sight of that. So the dynamics of what we want to be able to do is that. I think it's also important to note that what we do, I mean, one of the cornerstones of that fund, which is in preliminary stage, is we've indicated, is that you cannot have a situation where you have this piggybacking, where you pay transformed institutions or participants to fund and to bring in costs. I mean, I think the model that we're speaking about is a more inclusive model, because what you don't want to do is to make transformation or the monies that you make available for transformation to be abused and to be used in a way that doesn't allow that to be achieved. Chair, I mean, on the issue of the ombud, I mean, the point raised by Member Volmerans, I think the rationale, I mean, I think it's something that Parliament obviously will be seized with, and I think what we had indicated at the point was the rationale for this was in relation to this regulation. Obviously, if there are reasons why we need to collapse it or even remove it out of here and produce an alternative, then that's something obviously we're not, I think, as a department going to say. Chair, on the breakdown of the concentration, Member Mabe, the concentration, the race dynamics and the question of the statistics, we'll produce that so that when Parliament, when members do go out there, I will ask the research unit to produce that set of statistics around it so that members have insight on what are some of the research and policy foundational issues that we've had in relation to this. Just the last point before I hand over to the colleagues is on the issue around the question of the issues is that there are checks and balances in the bill. So what we're asking is that it's about this regulation, transformation and protection of consumers. So you'll see we've put in the chapter 5 around the question of inspectors and their powers. And we've run this through the state law advisor, and they've said we're in compliance. So this is not some unit that or inspectorate that will, I mean, they will require, where there's a search required, they need a warrant. So it's not warrantless search and seizures. But I think, Chair, what it does say is that we must be able to give some leeway for the authority to look at inspections, and those are inspections which would obviously be voluntary. Where there isn't, obviously then the authority would have to seek the requisite court protection to have those kind of things. And obviously, if we're dealing with public money, if we're dealing with transparency and equity, then I don't think there should be any reasons why people should not be open to having their books vetted. With that. Thanks, Chair. I'll just ask colleagues. I don't know if I've missed off.
Thank you very much. Our learned legal person, you got accolades from Member Shonyane there. So don't drop the ball.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and to Honourable Members on the questions. You know, I'll start with the fairly simple questions, Chair. Chair, with regards to your question as to why the transformation form part of the general provision, you know, Chairperson, it's just a drafting issue. You know, there's no specific set of reasons why, but I'm basically persuaded that we need, in order to give credence to it, you know, we can, of course, remove, you know, that particular provision, you know, and make it a chapter. And therefore, the process of a consultation process will also assist us as well in terms of bringing in number of other issues, you know, that will fall directly under the transformation chapter. You are correct, Chair. You know, that if the legislation is to drive transformation, it cannot just be forming part of the general provision. You know, it's not much of an issue. We're not married to any process, Chair, but we can, of course, you know, through your instructions, you know, reposition it, you know, by way of redrafting. The other important aspect, Chair, under the same chapter, is that, you know, we need also not to bear in mind that as and when we are trying to achieve those transformational imperatives, the Section 69 also proposes, Chair, a number of measures that we want to compel the authority to do. And if you have a look at the Chair under subsection 3, it says the authority must. You know, we're not giving any discretionary provision, you know, for the authority to do certain things. But what we're trying to do, we're trying to compel the authority to implement and assess measures And those particular measures, Chair, I think what you need to do is basically maybe to give a time frame upon those measures need to be developed. Because the measures might be developed by way of regulations, and the minister can give directives, or the authority can do certain things in terms of achieving that. But I think the only thing that we can do, that we can compel them to do under this circumstance, is not to say, you know, from time to time, is to, you know, is to attach a kind of time frame thereto. And also, Chair, on the same section, it also provides for the establishment of the transformation fund. Honourable members are raising very important issues around the transformation fund, and also how it's going to be, you know, applied. You know, is not going to be subject to an abuse, you know, by those who are well off, for them, you know, to tap into it. Chair, the reason why we've proposed this particular transformation fund is basically to assist, you know, some of the transformational programs as and when may be developed, you know, by the entity. We are also compelling under the same section, Chair, and under the same subsection, the establishment, you know, of the incubation programs and any other transformational measures. The issue is that, Chair, the incubation programs, you know, to be developed, to be established by the entity, need, actually, you know, some of them in particular need to be funded. But the issue of making sure to say that you don't subject it to that particular kind of an abuse, Chair, is to make sure to say that in developing all those measures, you will have those specific categories of certain individuals that need to qualify, or that may be qualifying for them, actually, you know, to be ring-fenced as incubators for their particular incubation program to be successful. In a nutshell, Chair, what we're saying is that there will be those qualification, you know, qualifying criterions for those who will be qualifying for a fund. And therefore, if, for example, we are establishing an incubation program, and therefore the incubation, you know, the transformation fund need to fund that incubation program, we'll need to have those specific requirements of who qualify and to which extent that you qualify. And once we have acquired, like for example, if we say it's a principalization program, if principalization program, the intention of it is to recruit, you know, the previous disadvantage for them to become principal, to be owners of the business, if you are supporting them through the, you know, transformation fund, we'll need also to give them access and through the assistance of this particular fund, if they achieve certain, you know, threshold in terms of, you know, their commission that they've acquired over a period of time. For example, we can set it in terms of measures that it can be about actually 10 million or 5 million. When they reach that particular level, then they need actually, you know, to, they're no longer going to benefit, you know, out of the incubator, they'll be out of the incubation program, then the fund will no longer assist them in terms of dealing with that. But those who, you know, their threshold or their income, because we normally receive the audited financial statement currently, and it will continue, then we'll have, you know, those particular assessments of those incomes, you know, a statement from those particular, you know, firms, that if your annual intern or income is beyond actually, you know, 10 million, 5 million, whatever the measure that the entity can, you know, can determine from time to time, then they need actually not to form part of that. But the fund itself is primarily focusing on actually, you know, capacitating and trying to assist those emerging and those struggling black estate agents. Like the honourable member have indicated, to which extent that is going to assist that? What other measures that are going to do to put into place? Because it can be, it cannot be free for all, it cannot be, you know, an issue that is subject to that particular process. So, Chair, I think in that particular note, we will have developed those particular measures, and we need to hold us accountable as to when the entity have to develop those measures. The other issue, Chair, that relating to how does the bill relate, you know, to the land acquisition? It's a very important question, because, Chair, it's important in a sense that in a process of estate agent, while they are conducting their business, you know, sometimes they do sell, you know, private land, you know, and in particular in those you know, rural areas or in those particular farms, they do sell farms, you know, in those particular areas. So it is quite important in a sense that we need to establish, you know, who are the estate agents who are playing a role in that space. So because currently we don't know who are, majority of them, they are playing a role in there. So in relation to the land question, it's important for us that we need to have, you know, a specific, you know, measures that are in place in terms of how do we assist, you know, those estate agents that have found themselves in the outside, you know, of the urban areas, so that they can be assisted accordingly as well in terms of, you know, land, you know, acquisition and so forth. So in the process, when the government identifies and acquires land and all those other things and dispose of it, it is also a critical element that for them they can to play a role in that space, because it's a responsibility as well of government also to assist them in terms of giving them access to business. Because the most difficult circumstances that black estate they don't survive at the moment, or members, is very clear, is that majority of them, they are struggling to have an access to business. Because in the instances for them to practice, like for example for them, you know, to be accredited, you know, in those estate agents or gated villages, like for example in Waterfall, for example, for you to, as a black estate agent, for you to go and be an active estate agent in that particular homeowners association, they'll require that, no, you have to pay homeowners association a particular, you know, fee. And most of our people, they don't even afford that. So the black estate agent, they'll always be selling at the outside of influence areas where there is money, where there is a lot of commission in those particular areas. And the state will tell us, Chair, to say that the majority of the black people and the black middle class, you know, were the ones who are, you know, active in the property space, and more especially in those particular, you know, range of 1 million to 5 million. So it's quite important that we need to assist them actually, you know, to, you know, to participate in that particular environment. Chair, the other issue of the inspectors, my colleagues have responded to, and they are dealt with quite, you know, significantly, and also in line with the Concord judgment. Because while we are drafting this particular, proviso, we're guided, actually, you know, by the Constitutional Court judgment in terms of how it should be, you know, inserted to make sure to say that we don't subject the process of the inspectors, you know, that they should be the law unto themselves. No, they should not be doing that. You know, it provides number of other measures in Chapter 5 as to what need to happen and what are the powers, you know, to enter, inspect, and to search and seize. So they need to do that within that reasonable time and without prejudice. There are certain processes that is strictly attached, you know, to that particular provision, because we are guided by that. We don't want to find a situation that people are abusing that particular provision, because correctly so, like we've indicated, don't remember, if it's not properly regulated, you know, it can be subject to an abuse, you know, and in particular with regards to the guidance that was given to us by the Constitutional Court. So all those aspects here, I think my colleagues will also add on the issue that relating to inspectors as to how currently are we implementing that in consultation with the law enforcement agencies, and therefore the, you know, the warrant must also be lawfully, you know, acquired, and then through the legal process, and the legal due process must of course inform the particular process. So lastly, on the issue of the definition, the definition is very long, yes, you know, of what is a property petitioner, but partly, the honourable member also responded, you know, to Honourable Sithole in respect to why it's, you know, is it a long definition? It's a long definition because we wanted actually, you know, to make sure that we regulate those who have been abusing the process, like honourable member have indicated. The assessors, they're alone to themselves, to auctioneers. We need to try, let me say, to regulate those ones, you know, in the public interest, and also to protect the consumers in the public space. Because quite frankly, like she has indicated, you know, we have received the comments before, and, you know, to say that, look, you know, please come and assist us. There has been that particular issue of abuse, you know, in that particular space of the property assessor, property evaluators, you know. We need, you know, to cover that particular space that we have not been regulated even in the past. So they cannot be the law unto themselves. I think the honourable member, she has managed to respond quite adequately into that particular question to say that why we have this long definition. Quite frankly, in the drafting, you know, experience that I have, you know, it's a long definition, yes, but as I'm saying, it's a long definition for a particular purpose to try, let me say, to make sure that we don't only cover estate agents, we cover those ones who are also playing a role into the space. So that's why we have a long definition. It's very quite clear, Honorable Stoll, because it's also make, you know, provisions, if I can just mention them few, it provides to say that, you know, which are those. Provide auctioneers, it provides actually assessors properties, it provide all those who are intermediaries in terms of making sure that you acquire, you know, the loans and all that. Those who are playing a role in the space, we are trying, let me say, not to cover them. Because what is important for them, the primary protection is the issue that relating to the issue of the trust fund. We are going to compel them so that they need to, you know, as and when they practice, they need to go to establish a trust fund. So many of them, they've been trying to run away from it because they know that once you got a trust fund, you know, account, then you know that you cannot abuse the product trust account. We are regulated in there. You cannot just eat it and have the money of the people without concluding the deal. The legislation stipulates very clear. Once you have money into the trust account, quite frankly, you cannot just dispose of it until the property or transaction has been registered or the parties are happy in the process. So I think that particular element is quite important that we have to deal with. Chair, I'll also hand over to my colleague, Advocate Tariu, just to add on the issue of inspectors.
Thanks, Chair. I think the issue of inspectors has been adequately covered by both my colleagues. Just to emphasize that, you know, the Constitutional Court recognized the necessity and importance of EAB having inspectors within their ranks. I think it also went on to also include SARS also, that it is important and of necessity for them to have these two institutions to have as inspectors. So I'm not going to further elaborate on that. It has been adequately covered. But just to mention other processes that are underway within the EAB, I think one of the honorable members indicated around the barriers of entry. We are currently running transformation programs within the institution in order to create an enabling environment as and when the new legislation comes into effect. There is that enabling environment for the previous disadvantage. One of those is what Kwesi has already elaborated on, which is called the principalization program. I'm not going to dwell on that. The second one, of course, is the amnesty program. We have conceptualized that particular program and will be implementing it very soon. And its intention is simple, to ensure that those that are outside the net, they come into the net. The other program that will be running as from July is a research into the reasons why people are compelled or to operate illegally. We want to understand the extent to which, you know, there are illegal operators within the industry. What are those measures and enabling environment that we can create to be able to ensure that they come into, like I said, the net. Of course, the other issue that an honorable member indicated is the cost of trading or the cost of doing business within the industry. That is why we're coming up with those measures, honorable member. And within the legislation, you realize that the minister is empowered to do certain things in order to create that enabling environment. One of those which, of course, as and when you do campaigns, is the cost of keeping trust account. Within the bill, we are empowering the minister to prescribe circumstances under which certain property practitioners may be exempted from keeping trust account, simply because it is costly to keep a trust account, and it is tantamount to a barrier to entry for your emerging estate agents or property practitioners. Chair, I think I've covered some of the issues that have been raised. Thank you.
So, Chair, just the one point that was raised, I think, by Member Sitole as well, was the issue around the question of the backyard dwellings. Now, I think one of the issues that we've raised, particularly in the transformation, is that, you know, we make the assumption that rental, for example, and property rental letting is a high income, middle income. But I think one of the constraints that we've picked up in the department is that if you have a managed low income rental sector, I mean, one of the most buoyant rental sectors in the country is in Tembisa, Winnie Mandela Park. But you find exploitation of not only the landlord and the tenant, because And one of the things that we've mooted as part of this transformation is to ensure and to make it obligatory for the sector to form part of government's responsibility to manage this, the rental sector, better, and to enforce that, because it's one of those, you know, it's a hidden issue that we don't deal with, and we know that but it's a rental sector, it's there, it exists, and we choose to ignore it because it's just not something that. So yes, I think the issue is forcing, and as part of your transformation agenda, ensuring that everyone is part of that net. And then the second issue, and I think which we've raised as well, is to then also enforce the state through its various either municipalities, provinces, and even nationally at public works, to force public works to apply the principles that we adopt and gazette in the transformation agenda. So they must use these property practitioners. They must go through that sector. And then the last one, Chair, is, I think, is the question of the link between the charter and the financial services charter. I think it's just important to note what we've said, that obviously the department through the minister will gazette that charter, but I think it's also important that in linking that charter, because if you're an estate agent and a bank does not provide financing for black estate agents to be able to source, you know, buyers know that if you go to a white estate agent, you're going to get a bank approval. Whereas if it's, you know, those kind of perceptions are real or not, but we've got to be able to then link what we do in our charter with what happens in the financial services charter, so the minimums, the norms, and the standards are the same. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Honourable members, Mr. Kanimtumele, Mr. Lati, yes. Very important inputs from the department. I think for us the important thing now is that we are starting to be tuned in kind of into the legislation, so that now we are going to start to sleep, breathe, talk, walk the legislation and be able to understand it in detail. And as the process unfolds, we will then be able to interact with South Africans more. And as that interaction happens, I think for me the issue of the ombuds cannot be overlooked, in the sense that in the department, for instance, there is a human settlement ombuds person, which is supposed to be dealing with everything that deals with issues in the department. In the CISOS, Community Schemes Ombuds Services, there's an ombud. And now, Property Practitioners Bill wants to have an ombud. I think that's the area that we need to understand and regularize as the department. Why so many ombuds? Because, of course, we understand that the ombuds in the department still will be put in the law when the Human Settlement Bill comes in, because obviously the Housing Act is post-1997, so the process of dealing with that legislation is not as urgent as dealing with the pre-1994 ones. But I'm just saying we should be very careful of making of not every entity is having an ombuds, because it gives an impression of we're not sure what we want to do exactly. So I think that's something that as the process unfolds, it needs to be looked at and see if really we just need one, or but I'm sure that will be clarified as the process unfolds. And as I'm listening to the officials, you know, explaining this use of the transformation and the principalization program and the incubation programs, you know, one just wonders why this entity that is going to come through. We have already agreed that the previously disadvantaged are very minimal in this sector. We have already agreed that it needs to transform. We have already agreed that it actually contributes to about 6 trillion into the fiscus. And why don't we just probably look at having an academy? An academy that will look at all these precipitation programs, at these incubation programs, an academy that will actually allow these previously disadvantaged people to actually be trained and be able to go through all these processes. But I'm sure it's something that we'll discuss in detail as the process unfolds. But I think for me, the academy would be an ideal thing that we can deal with, which the transformation fund will fund. And that would, at the end, everybody would sit and be able that I am attending an academy of the Property Practitioners Bill. I'm going to be a principal of a state agency. You know, something like that. That is formalized, something that is, you know, but I'm just saying, other than these bits and pieces of trying to transform this thing about incubation programs, we are still not doing enough. I think the academy would actually do well. But we will deal with that. And we are also hoping that the department at some point will submit to us all those submissions that you have received so that we can be able to see that those that have they been incorporated, what have been the challenges as the process unfolds. And we all know that this process is going to be a very cumbersome and expensive process in Parliament, colleagues. We will still have to get approval for the advert, and then we are hoping that the advert will go out now in July. And remember, tell everybody that you know has got an interest in this sector, those that will not read papers or listen to radios, they must make those submissions. It's important that our people must participate in this. You know, and normally, once that advert is out, it takes about a month. It's open for a month for those submissions to come through. We are also hoping that if the Parliament allows us, we need to have a summit so that we are able to also involve as many people as possible, even before the public hearings, so that we are able to have a summit where the people in this sector can talk about this, make submissions in that summit. We have the comfort that as we leave this Parliament, we have done justice in this piece of legislation, because from where I am sitting, it's one of the most important legislations that we could have ever dealt with as this sitting Parliament. Moreover, because for us as Human Settlement, it is the only bill, except us passing the CSOS, this is the only bill that we would have dealt with in this term. And let's do justice to it and be proud. Even if some of us don't come back, you are able to claim and say, you know, I played a role in that piece of legislation. I actually made sure that it existed. So let's do the best we can. And thank you very much to the cooperation, both of the department, the state law advisor, the legal person from Parliament, because as we now unfold this process, they will be able to help us and give us that, you know, legal acumen so that we don't get out of it. Are we still within the constitutional principles and therefore able to deal with this thing correctly? I'm not sure if there's anything else around this piece of legislation that any member wants to raise. Because remember, we still have a whole lot of time to go through, because the summit probably will take place around September or around end of August, and therefore public hearing. So we're going to be very busy with this piece of legislation. Very exciting times ahead of us, very busy. Media will be our friends. Honorable Shelembe, what do you want to say now? Because I had asked you for a signal. You said you don't have a signal. Okay. Can you then talk to your signal?
No, thank you, Chair. No, not that much. Just to concur with what you have said on the issue of the ombuds. You know, it seems we're going to have a lot, and even in that bill, it says the minister will determine the remuneration of that, also the term of office, which may lead to a situation where, as a committee, we don't have the information that is guiding the minister on the issue, when do you extend the term. Say for now, you are saying, let's look at it. If we leave it like that, and then the minister will appoint, say, for 5 years, but if maybe that can be looked at, what guides the minister when it comes to the issue of the remuneration, and what guides the minister to have more than 5 years when appointing the officer.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shalembe. Yes, remember, very important point, but because that's what now we're busy with, so that those points come in as the, because remember, the bill is in our hands now. We can rewrite the whole bill if we want. Do you know that? As members of parliament, we can decide that this bill is not talking to us. If we've got the energy, we can start to say we're starting from afresh. So that's the power that we have. Then we must use that power to the best of our ability. So I'm just saying we've got it within us now to make sure that the process goes well. And from here, we know that, as I've said, we don't know when Parliament will allow us to put the advert out. We hope that it will be done early, mid-July, so that we can be able to deal with the process. But in the meantime, you're coming back from Parliament on the 11th, that week of the 11th of August. That's where recess is finishing. But that week, 11th to the 17th of August, is committee week and oversight. There's no sittings. The sittings will only be the following week. That's the week that we hope that if all goes well, I don't even want to promise again, but if all goes well, that's the week that you will be going where you are supposed to go, if everything goes well. But otherwise, thank you very much. We really appreciate all of you. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.